here we are once again on Best of the Valley Shore. Don DeCesare here with you in the midday period. And of course, magically, mystically, even digitally, back with you in the evening, on the weekends, in the middle of the night, extra Tuesdays. I'm here all the time. At least digitally I am. And I actually have somebody who can help me to explain the mystics of this to you. But I can't do the digits and the mystics at the same time, so that means that we have to put the digits off. Mm-hmm. So you folks out there who desperately need to know about digits, you know what to do. You wait patiently, courteously, till the program concludes. That is the polite thing to do. And then, and only then, you can call Bill Gates. He's standing by to explain it to you. I have a person in the studio here today, and I'm pleased to say that she is a friend. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen her in a while, so that's my fault, so shame on me. But now I'm seeing her right now directly in my line of sight. And her name is Lucira Jane Niebelung.
Yes.
And when last I saw you, you were Jane. And now you're Lucira.
Yes.
And that tale, I want you to tell that tale, because that tale kind of flows into the whole conversation that we're going to have about leading with love.
As love.
Well, I go with, you go as. But we're going to get into all of the prepositions and all of that. But first, okay. There was a moment in time between the last time you were here when your book first came out.
Yes.
And now, mm-hmm. that you changed your name. Mm-hmm. And that's part of your whole change of life. So I need to understand it.
Okay. I was born Jane, and my mother is going to love hearing this story.
Good.
And
Mom's listening, that's good.
Mom's listening, and about 3 or 4 years ago, the name Jane just didn't feel right any longer, and I also, at the same time, knew that my spiritual name was Lucira. And in the course of a short period of time, I was talking to friends and, you know, saying Jane didn't feel right any longer, and I didn't know what name to use, and they said, well, you already have one, and it's Lucira. So on St. Patrick's Day 3 years ago, I went down to Eastline Probate Court and applied to have my name legally changed from Jane Corrigan Niebelung, get it? Corrigan.
I got it.
On St. Patrick's Day.
I got it.
To Lucira Jane Niebelung. And Jeff McNamara, who happens to be the probate judge, also knows us because we're in town. And so 3 days later in the mail, I got the decree from the probate court that my name was indeed legally changed from Jane Corrigan Niebelung to Lucira Jane Niebelung.
Okay, that's the legality of it. That's obviously important.
Mm-hmm.
But you said something that I need to follow up on.
Okay.
You said that you knew, and other people knew, that your spiritual name
mm-hmm.
was Lucira.
Yes.
So does everybody have a spiritual name?
Yes, and if you ask, and it's an eternal name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, the way to describe it, it's an energy that you carry.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can kind of do a play on what my new name means.
Yeah.
Lucira means the power of light.
Right, okay.
Jane is a derivative of John, which is God's gift. Niebelung, the Niebelung are the creatures of illusion, the creatures of the mist.
Mm-hmm.
So translated, my name is the power of light is God's gift to humanity.
Wow. That's pretty serious.
Something to live into.
Well, yes, and that's part of what we're going to be talking about, Lucira and I, as we continue the mm-hmm. conversation here, and how she came to this, because you had, I don't want to demean anything about your past, but you had what I would call a conventional past, and now you've moved into a different realm.
Yes, and, okay, so I went from a conventional past, okay,
Corporate life,
Aetna, Cigna, you name it. Been mm-hmm. there, done that. Worked with the chairman's office. Been laid off 3 times, 4 times with packages, so forth and so on. So I've done it all in a corporate realm.
Yeah.
My first book, which came out 5 years ago, was called Leadership and Service to Life.
Mm-hmm.
We are divine. Our essence is love. So I kind of went to the other extreme on spirituality. And I think what I have now is a bridge between secular world and the spiritual world. And that's leading is love. and it's a bridge. So when we think about it, and we look at any of the world's traditions, they all talk about love, compassion, charity. It doesn't matter which ones they are. And it's how we are to live our lives. And when I took a step back in my career as working with leaders and what leadership is about, I said, wait a minute, all this theoretical mumbo jumbo about what makes a leader is nonsense, because what we're really saying is when people love, they lead. And when leaders are truly leading, they're loving others.
It's pretty hard for me to argue with that, so I'm not going to try.
Okay.
But I'm still trying to grasp how one finds that in oneself. You found it.
Mm-hmm.
Were you looking for it? Or did it find you?
Well, which piece? The understanding of it?
Yes. I mean, there was a moment in time when you had, James Joyce would call it an epiphany.
Yes.
You arose, you awoke, you ascertained that things are different, really, than I have always thought them to be, and now I need to address them differently.
Yes.
Is that a fair...
That's a great question, and yes. I've worked with leaders on their leadership for 30 years, as a consultant, as a coach, helping organizations design their management practices. The first epiphany was, is leadership is different from management.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership is about people. Management is about work, objects, things. So we control things, we control work, but leading about is about people and something different. Then I was looking at all the different leadership models that are out there, and I'm saying, there's something underneath all of this. And when I kind of sat with it, all of a sudden it came to me, is that leadership is really about love. If you're talking about people and our humanity and honoring our humanity, it's really about love.
Now, when we celebrate leaders, and we do, I mean, I have historically, you know, my great uncle Julius.
You mean is it Julius Caesar?
Yes, that guy. I'm from the wrong side of the family. But anyway, I mean, there's a celebrated leader. But I'm not sure that we ever celebrated about him or about other leaders that I could mention that they were loving their followers.
Okay, so can we talk about the meaning of love?
Yeah, well, we can talk about whatever you want, because I'm trying to understand it.
Okay,
yeah.
So when we talk about love, there are essentially three levels, and I'm only going to talk about two of them here. The first level of love is how we traditionally think about it. It's affection, attraction, dare I say, emotional attachment to a person, place, or thing. And it's really about helping us feel good about who we are. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's one view of love. A more expanded view of love, and I have to admit, I base this on Eric Fromm's work in his book that was published, The Art of Loving, the year I was born. I'm not going to tell you what year that was, but it was a number of years ago.
1973.
I think it was older than, had about 20 years on to that one. Thank you, Don. But in it, he talks about there being, that love is really a philosophy, a way of being in life with four aspects. He called it care, understanding, respect, and responsibility. Responsibility has a bad connotation in our world. It's about an obligation more than anything else. So I changed the word to responsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about love and leading is love, it's caring about people and their well-being. Not taking care of, but caring about them as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It's about understanding them and what their perspectives are. And here's the kicker, without judgment. It's respecting people for who they are, what their choices are, without control. And to do all that, you need to be responsive, being fully present in the now, not carrying all your baggage with you and projecting it into your relationship. So really, leading as love is really about our relationships with people.
Right. So, do we expect that each person who understands this concept is a leader?
Yes. So, and here's the other. So we equate in our society leadership with people and with persons in authority. That does not make a leader.
Right.
They're people in authority, but it does not make them leaders.
Well, I certainly accept that. I mean, there are certainly people in authority that I don't think are leading me anywhere except possibly the wrong way.
So, yeah, like off a cliff.
Right. So I get that. That people that traditionally we would designate as leaders because they are in authority or power aren't necessarily leaders in the sense of what we're describing here.
Correct.
And I suppose, conversely, people that we don't think of as in power could be leaders.
Yes, and
like you and me, for example, we don't got any power, but we could be leaders.
We're leaders every day in our lives. I have a colleague who makes the distinction about leading our lives and managing our lives.
Okay.
So we can make that distinction there. When I think about leadership in a collective sense, I would say leaders establish common ground for the greater good. So it's not about exploiting or taking advantage of another person for my benefit. It's really about what's looking around and saying, well, where can we come to a common agreement about what needs to happen for the greater good for a longer period of time so it's sustainable? We don't see a lot of that.
I'm visiting here today with Lucira Jane Niebelung, my friend. And a visionary person, as you can tell from our conversation so far, and a fascinating person to know. And I will mention now, and we'll mention it again later, that she does have a website, which is leadingaslove.com, as if that were one word, leadingaslove.com. And Jane, well, let me stop that now, because I'm fighting myself here.
That's okay.
It's Lucira Jane. You can sit back and relax for a moment, have a sip of water, because it's... And here we are once again on Best of the Valley Shore, Don DeCesare here with you in the midday period, and of course, magically, mystically, and digitally back with you in the evening, on the weekend... In the middle of the night, I'm here. I'm here for you. And I would explain all this to you at some future date, but it won't be today. So that means you need to wait until the program concludes, because we have a wonderful guest here and we want to be courteous and polite. And then at the end of the program, you can call Steve Wozniak. He's standing in line waiting for an iPhone 5, and he has plenty of time on his hands to explain it to you. So now I have here in the studio Lucira Jane Niebelung, who is the proponent. Is that a good word?
I guess so, yes.
Or advocate?
Better? I like that word better.
A little better, okay. For a philosophy, can I call it a philosophy of life?
Yes.
Known as leading as love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel obligated to ask, and I don't mean to demean anything involving this, but... How does this compare to New Age thinking? Is this, would we call this New Age thinking?
No.
No.
I would not call this New Age thinking.
But
I think
this is old age thinking.
This is old age thinking. We are going back to, well, I don't want to say go, we're returning to our roots, if you will, as human beings and the qualities that make us human. With all the fear in the world, we have retreated from relationship with each other.
We have.
We have retreated from caring about one another. And it's all, you might even say, I said this, you know, before the break about we almost live in a way where we're exploiting one another. We don't give anything unless we're sure we're going to get something in return. And what's disheartening for me personally is that the people in authority that we give our power to, I mean that literally, we are giving away our own power.
Yes, we are.
And it's almost like we feel we don't deserve to be cared about, to be understood, to be respected, which is not asking a lot. So when I'm calling it leading is love, if love makes you uncomfortable, you can use the word wisdom. But we have a right, and I'm hoping everyone feels that they deserve to be treated with care, understanding, and respect.
How does this measure up, Lucira, with the fact that we don't communicate? In the age of total communication, we don't communicate well. Mm-hmm. That's one part. I'm making a statement now. And here comes the second part. And we have become crass in so many ways. Whether it's the guy on the road with the phone in his ear and the coffee in the other hand, driving with the palm of the hand with the coffee in it, who is making everybody else's life miserable because he's drifting. I mean, that's crassness, mm-hmm. not to mention other things, but I'll mm-hmm. just call it crass for the moment. And we could give zillions of examples of how we have made it tougher to relate to each other, not easier.
We've all put up barriers. And this is my personal observation. So we enter into a pseudo-communication. We have the internet, which is wonderful. We can connect in a heartbeat. And as human beings, we have two innate needs. One is to feel the connection that we know is there. And second is to create. That's what we as human beings want to do. So we are reaching out desperately for connection, and at the same time, all of our fears are around us, and they don't allow us to connect, truly connect with each other. And in order to truly connect with each other, we need to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. And that means opening ourselves up, but there's so much fear around us. And being vulnerable actually takes an incredible amount of courage and strength, whether it is in today's society or at any point in time in human mm-hmm. history. Mm-hmm. So what I would venture to guess is we are communicating with each other, not as human being to human being, but object to object.
What's the goal? You are an author. We've mm-hmm. mentioned that, and we'll mention the names of your books in a bit. A communicator yourself, mm-hmm. a leader yourself, mm-hmm. a teacher, a coach, mm-hmm. a consultant you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So what's the goal? If you could have your way, if I had the Don magic wand here today, it's actually at the shop, but if I had it and I let you use it, what would you want to happen?
I would like people just to be aware that, first of all, we're humans, and to relate human being to human being. And to be aware of where we give our power away. So if we give it away to people in authority who don't deserve it because they are not treating us as if we deserve to be treated the way we should be treated as human beings, just to raise everybody's awareness about what it means to be alive and thriving, to be treated with dignity and well-being, and we all deserve nothing less.
There's a word that I don't hear much anymore. I used to hear it a lot when I was young, back in the Harding administration, and I don't hear it much anymore, and it worries me, and the word is neighbor. Now, it had a meaning, at least when I was young, I think. And now its meaning is the people who live next door or possibly across mm-hmm. the street, but not the meaning that I recall from being young of the people who were in your community with whom you related, who looked out for you and mm-hmm. you looked out for them, mm-hmm. mundane things and bigger than mundane things, you know. I don't hear that word much. Does that play into this?
Absolutely, because, okay, we talked about it earlier, and it's that I believe that when we love, we lead. Anton Saint-Exupéry has a wonderful quote, and it says that perhaps love is my gently leading you back to yourself. And for me, that means our humanity. In the neighborhood, that's a perfect example, popped up. I grew up in West Hartford, and, you know, we had kids all our age, but my mother worked full-time, other mothers did not, and we all watched out for each other. Last year, when Hurricane Irene put a huge oak tree that the National Guard had to take across the road in front of my house, so 12 neighbors up the street, I was the chauffeur to take everybody out. Mm-hmm. And have I seen them since? No, now we just wave to say goodbye, but it was like the crisis brought us together to care about one another. So you're right. Neighbor is key. If you cannot be open and in relationship with the people that are close to you, proximity makes it easier. How are you going to learn to relate on a human one-on-one level, or even on a group level, on our phones, via text messages or whatever? I read this last week that the average teenager sends 3,000 text messages a day. A month. And I was astounded. And are they really relating to one another?
That's 100 a day.
That's 100 a day. And I'm like, I couldn't even imagine. I'm overwhelmed with, you know, five emails a day.
I don't want you to get too excited, Lucira, but I think your numbers are way low.
You think they're low?
Well,
I'm quoting something I saw.
Yeah, I think that the number of text messages is increasing exponentially mm-hmm. by the month. Not even by the year anymore.
Yep.
And that if you had a teenager here who only, and I'm using the word only in quotation marks here, who only did 3,000 text messages a month, you would discover that they are backward, so to speak. 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 text messages a month is now common, I believe.
Oh, gosh.
So, but that circles back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, and that is, I don't know that they're really communicating. They are certainly sending messages mm-hmm. back and forth. And a message can be something as, you know, meet me on the corner. Okay. I mean, that's actually two messages.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's communicating.
It's
something else.
Okay. Well, it's not communicating. If we really think about it, the research shows us that 80% of our communication is nonverbal. In other words, other than words.
Right.
It's our tone of voice. It's how we look. It's our gestures. It's our energy field. HeartMath, which is an institute in California, shows that we create an energy field that goes in 14 feet in all directions all the time. And that's where they can measure it. It's the mm-hmm. energy radius field from our hearts. It's
right.
an electromagnetic field that can be measured. So if we think about that, when we walk into a room full of anger and full of fear, everybody in that room, conscious it or not, are picking it up.
Right.
Conversely, if we are walking into a room with gratitude or compassion or, dare I say, love, everybody else in the room is picking up on that and can entrain to that. So it's how, is when I talk about leaders in any sense, it's how are we bringing people to a higher state of who they are as a human being, and showing them who they are as a human being. That's really what this is about.
Well, I certainly get that. I'm still struggling with the word leader, but I understand you're defining it differently than mm-hmm. we have traditionally defined it. Who do you mentioned Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Yes.
Who are your models? Besides him.
I don't really think about who my model is, because I want to be myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me bring it down to this. Mm-hmm. You cannot love another unless you love yourself and mm-hmm. honor who you are and all your experiences, good, bad, and ugly. It's about learning to accept. So if I were to use a word that characterizes what I mean by love, it's full acceptance. Not approval. The kind of common understanding of love is that we approve of what another does. They agree with us. That is not love. And so when I see the polarities in our political discourse now, and kind of like the blaming and the finger pointing and everything else, that's the furthest thing. Leaders do not create polarities like that. They, by definition, create common ground for the greater good. So when I look at a political discourse, there's no leaders among any of them. Period.
Mm-hmm.
They're not leading.
I don't think you're going to get an argument from me about that. I'm visiting here today with Lucira Jane Niebelung, speaker, writer, teacher, facilitator, consultant, coach, and very nice person. You got to put that on the resume. I promised we were going to tell folks the names of your books and how they might get them, so tell us about that.
Okay. The second book hasn't been written yet.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. If you go to my website, there's an awful lot of writing there. Feel free to poke around and steal whatever you want. There's also...
Borrow,
yes, with... perfect attribution. The other thing is that's there is there's a self-awareness profile. So if you're interested in can I lead as love? There's a self-awareness profile there. Feel free to take that. The first book I wrote, which is more in the spiritual genre, is Leadership and Service to Life. You can get that at Amazon. You can probably even get it in the penny book sections. You picked up a used copy, and that's fine. But that, again, it has a very spiritual basis.
Right. The website is leadingaslove.com.
Correct.
As if it were one word. So it's leadingaslove .com. Or you could put that into a web browser thing, a web search thing, mm-hmm. and then find it that way.
Yes.
And I encourage folks to poke around the website and get to know Lucira a little better. And believe it or not, the time has flown by, mm-hmm. so we are just about out of it, Lucira, so I have to ask you to come back soon. We can't let so many years go by before we see you again.
Oh, I want to be back before the election, Don.
All right. Well, we're going to work. Which election did you have in mind?
This one. This upcoming election.
All right. Lucira, you have a pleasant remainder of your day. And, of course,
thank you for
coming. And thanks to all of you folks for being out there. And we'll see you again next time on Best of the Valley Shore. Bye-bye now.